and welcome back to the Retro Asylum. This is episode 295 and my name is Dean Swain. Joining me later is Alex Crowley of the Arcade Archive. But right now, you've just got me. And guys, this is going to be a shorter episode than usual. The interview with Alex is around 30 minutes long. So it's just going to be me introducing it, going over a few topics very quickly, and then I'll be saying goodbye later on. But yeah, what have I been up to? Well, I've been playing a Vectrex game called Rock and Saucers, which has been developed by the guy who developed the Vec Fever cartridge, which is a multi-cart and like a development cart all rolled into one. Very, very expensive. I wish I had one. They are very hard to get hold of. If you want to see what they can do, have a look on Retro Man Cave's channel, Neil, on his YouTube channel. He's used Alex's one, because Alex has got one. The guy I'm going to be speaking to shortly. Very impressive. Anyway, this game, up until now, has only been available on this cartridge, the Vec Fever. But Thomas, the developer, he's released the game into the public domain. So, yeah, I've been playing that. And it's basically an Asteroids clone. A really good one. It looks so vibrant on the Vectrex, even without an overlay. It looks absolutely amazing. And probably is the closest thing to Asteroids outside of the arcade. So, yeah, that I highly recommend. If you have got a Vectrex and you've got a multi-cart, an SD card solution one, where you can download games and play them, I highly recommend that you do give it a try. It is, honestly, it's stunning to look at. Right, okay, Crash Live event. This is coming up. This is taking place on the 26th of November, so not long now, guys. You can get tickets at retrofusionbooks.com. Me, Steve, and Chris will be there, as well as Chris O'Regan, former host, and a few. Well, there'll be lots of people there. Don't just come to meet us. There's much more interesting things to see. Spectrum Next team will be there. I'm hoping to catch a glimpse of Target Renegade for the ZX Spectrum Next, which is currently in development. Because, as you know, I love a scrolling beat 'em up, or at least the earlier ones. So yeah, that's the Crash Live event taking place at Banks's Stadium, Walsall, Birmingham, November 26th. So like I say, if you want to book a ticket, I think there's some left. You'll find those at retrofusionbooks.com. The other thing I've been up to is messing about with the Mister, which I know I'm always banging on about, but honestly, guys, if you haven't got one, try and get one soon, because the price of this thing is starting to rocket, and I hear that in January it's going to go even higher because of the cost and, you know, chip shortage and all that lark. So yeah, do try and get one. So yeah, Outrun has been released in beta form on the Mister, and I've been testing it with a steering wheel. Now, the original steering wheel that I bought, that I thought would work with it, didn't. So what I got, and I managed to pick this up for a tenner on Facebook, is a Logitech Driving Force X, which is a PlayStation 2 steering wheel that also has a USB lead. It's like the lead is split into two. So you've got the PlayStation 2 connector and a USB lead. And if you plug this into your Mister, it will work. You have to, on the Mister, there's an option to more or less redefine your keys, like an old Spectrum game or an Amstrad game. You do that, move the wheel to the right and what have you, you know, and then you run it through Outrun. And it works, and it is great to play. But that core definitely does need some work. But as I say, it's in beta, so it's unfinished. So yeah, been having a lot of fun with that. Also, guys, we've been planning the Christmas episode. There's a lot of work going on in the background. If we can pull it off, it should be a fun episode. Well, I'm really looking forward to recording it. We've got a few guests on, and it's going to be a good winning format, hopefully. So that's something to look forward to. Obviously, me, Chris and Steve will also be doing part three of the 1990s specials. So that's all to look out for. Anyway, let's get on with the main show. And here is the interview with Alex Crowley. Okay, welcome to the Retro Asylum once again. It's Alex Crowley, the artist formerly known as Nintendo Arcade. He is now the Arcade Archive, if I can get my teeth around it. Welcome back to the Retro Asylum, mate. How you doing?
Hello, Dean. I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Thanks for having us on.
That's all right, mate. Now, for those who haven't subscribed to your channel and who haven't subscribed to Retro Man Cave, RMC, explain what's going on. So, because you've been very busy, you're setting up an arcade museum.
Yeah, so Neil put a sort of advert out, really, I guess, looking advertising a space within this building, which is an old mill. I think it's about 200 or 300 years old, where he's already got his computer museum set up. And they were looking for other businesses to come in and sort of fill that space, really, sort of related to what he was doing. But, I mean, they were looking down all sorts of avenues, from sort of a caf to a retro game shop, all that kind of stuff. And I just thought it'd be a great opportunity there for an arcade.
Yeah, you know. Which is something you've been wanting to do for some time there, isn't it?
Well, in the last year or two, I guess. I've never really thought about actually setting up an arcade myself, because I lived in London before and I always thought that was impossible to do anything in London because the rent's so high and everything else. Sure. But, you know, since I've moved out this way, Oxfordshire, it's just an opportunity that came about. And I went down and I had a look at the space and it was perfect for an arcade. It was on the ground floor, whereas Neil's up at the top, on the top floor. And it just... having an arcade there just complements perfectly what Neil's trying to do, which is great.
Yeah, because you've already got an audience there, haven't you, really?
You've already got an audience there. You've already got foot traffic there coming in, and they're all enthusiasts. It's not just the general public, you know, families dropping their kids off the afternoon and leaving them in a place like they do with some arcades. This is an actual place where you're going to go there and learn something, but at the same time, it's a hands-on museum. You get to play everything as well, and that's exactly what I want to achieve with the arcade museum. I want it to be an education, and also I want you to have fun in there. So it's striking that balance with what we're doing, but mainly I am focusing it on as a museum where you'll learn something about the games, because a lot of the games that we've got in there are pioneering and they've done things for the first time than any other game or any other developer had done before then. So that's what we're trying to achieve with it. And so, I went along, saw the space and just thought, yes, it's fantastic. And we had lunch together, met Richard, who owns the building. He's got his electronics company in there, Heber, who have also been into sort of the corn-up industry in one way or another, making fruit machines. And Richard's really into his retro. He loves retro. And Neil, with his YouTube channel, we made a perfect partnership, basically. We all got on really well.
It is perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if the machines go wrong, you've got an expert on site, so to speak. Like I said, all the people who are visiting Neil are going to come down and take a look. So, I think... you know, it's worked out so well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's starting a journey. The history of video games is where it started, in the arcades, not on the consoles or computers. It started in the arcades. It started, you know, the first game being Computer Space, but it wasn't really a commercial success. It wasn't until Atari's Pong came along.
Pong, yeah.
That became a commercial. We got that in the museum. We've got electromechanical game Gunfight, which
looks interesting.
Yeah, Yeah, that was an inspiration.
I can remember playing that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an inspiration for a lot of companies back in the day, because I guess they didn't really have any ideas of what a video game would look like. So they took ideas from EM games, and Gunfight is one example where Taito copied the idea, made Western Gun. And the graphics are quite primitive. And then I think it was about a time when CPUs were becoming quite cheap. And the idea was put forward to Midway. Could you do anything with this game? They said, yeah, we can. Now we've got a microprocessor. We can make the graphics slightly better and make it a slightly better game. And then that formed into the game Gunfight, which is what we have in the museum as well. That's Midway's Gunfight, which is basically the same game as Taito's Western Gun. And Taito's Western Gun is a copy of, not copy, but it took inspiration from the EM game Gunfight. So there already, we've started the story in the museum. And these cabinets all need restoration. They all need work. But that's all part of the museum's appeal, as we will be showing, showcasing the restorations on YouTube. And you'll be able to come down to the museum and see the work that we're doing on them to get them going for next time when you come down, when hopefully they will be working, you know. And that's all happening in the small room. And then you move into the larger room, the arcade, where hopefully all of the games will be working.
Right. It's been really interesting watching your YouTube channel over the past few months, because we've seen you even, you know, you're a builder by trade, bricklayer. We've seen you doing the place up and bringing the machines in. And I wince every time I see you pulling those machines off the back of the van.
Yeah.
I do worry you're going to drop one. Has there been any accidents? Well,
no, not yet. I mean, I am extra careful when moving the cabinets than I normally would be, because I broke my arm a couple of years ago. So my right arm's very weak.
Yeah.
So I'm always extra careful making sure it's well secured on that sat truck. And I'm just taking my time, because if it went, my arm would not be able to pull it back up again. I'll just have to let it go.
And a lot of these machines have been donated as well, haven't they?
They're on loan. Yeah, so the community stepped forward, the UK VAC community, which has been amazing. Some amazing friends that have offered and loaned us some amazing machines. They really have. I mean, we've got like Midway's Seawolf, which is an incredible game. To have that in there is just incredible. It really is. It's not working, but, you know, that's another project cab we hope to get going. Very interesting cab. It's got a periscope. It's got about five mirrors inside. It runs on Space Invaders hardware. It's got black lights in it. It's got the Pepper's Ghost effect in there. It's just an incredible-looking machine. You know, very primitive gameplay, but it really draws you in with the atmosphere, you know, and the sound effects. And, you know, a lot of people haven't seen this stuff, and it's great that these collectors have offered these cabinets, because otherwise they're just sitting in storage, just not doing anything at all. And if you think about it, a lot of these arcade, well, all of these arcade machines were made for people to play in a social environment, not at home, on your own, like a console computer, but in a social environment where you put money in and you get to experience a game. And that's what I want to do with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not quite as old as you, but I do remember Sega's Gunfight, the electromechanical game, and like the one you just mentioned. So for someone like me, I remember these games, but I haven't seen them in 40 years or so, you know? So I can't wait to catch a glimpse of these machines.
It's the first time I've seen Seawolf in 40 years, and it just sent shivers down my spine. It was just like, oh, my God. We've got Seawolf. I haven't seen this for such a long time. So amazing to see that in here. And that's what I'm trying to tell. I'm trying to tell a story from sort of the Bronze Age, black and white era, through to colour, Galaxians, and then into the classic 80s era. And then we'll probably stop at the early 90s, because for me, that is the classic arcade era. That's what we're interested in. After that point, if you're my age, you would have left the arcade and moved on to consoles, because by then they
PlayStation, Saturn, they were catching up, wasn't they?
even earlier than that, the 16-bit era, SNES Mega Drive, PC Engine, all that kind of stuff, Neo Geo. That's the stuff I was playing. I got just got the arcades weren't interesting anymore. And the games that were coming out on those systems back then were not only doing great arcade ports, but they were also doing making games that we hadn't seen before with much more depth, in much more adventure, and they took longer to play because you didn't need to pump money into it. So it was a total new experience, and that drew us kids out of the arcade. So that's the era we're concentrating on, 70s, 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. That Pong machine you've got, I mean, how clean is that? That's amazingly...
factory
how,
fresh.
How that has been... Yeah, it looks like it's just rolled off the production line.
It does. It is incredible. And it's all that's in the back is a little TV. You know, it's an actual TV in the back. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? You know, most machines that I've... familiar with, they had a dedicated, well, not dedicated, but you know, Wells Gardner monitor in or something.
Yeah,
but to have an actual off the shelf TV from a shop, that's mad. But that's how it was done.
Well, I think that's why a lot of operators were a bit timid about getting them in arcades, because suddenly they had to repair TVs, you know, and they weren't quite ready for that. And Atari's Pong actually didn't sell that many. It was other companies that cloned it. Already had a manufacturing base set up that were able to actually sell thousands and thousands of them. Whereas I think Atari's Pong didn't sell that many at all, maybe 3,000 to 5,000.
It wasn't just the arcades it was cloned in, was it? You know, you had all these different little consoles at home that could play something similar to Pong.
It was easy to make. Yeah, it's all TTL logic. Mm. It's easy stuff to recreate and clone once you knew how the circuit board worked. So everyone was at it. And, of course, then you didn't have any copyright laws or anything like that. So you weren't doing anything wrong, you know.
Yeah. Well, just look at the early days, you know, with the home computers, all the clones of arcade games there. They just sometimes they even used the proper name. They didn't have the license. Did. But you've got... two rooms, is that right?
Yeah, we've got
you've got the main arcade room,
and an entrance room, which is almost going to be like my YouTube studio room where you'll see a lot of the videos being filmed from. So, a lot of hope when it's finished, it's still in sort of a process of being completed, but the plan is to do a lot of the restorations of the arcade cabinets in that room, the studio room. Just struggling to get a bit of the acoustics right in there. It's not quite right yet, but we're working on it. The more stuff we get in there, the better it will sound. Yeah, and that's the little room.
And then into the main room.
The main room. So, Richard's built a lovely door, and it's got like an arcade monitor. Not arcade monitor. It's got a monitor in the door, but it looks like an arcade door. Yeah, window with arcade buttons and a joystick. You walk through that door. And then you're into the arcade museum, where it's quite low lit, but we're going to have descriptions in every cabinet, so you'll be able to read about the history of a lot of the games that are in there, because they've all got a story to tell. And hopefully you come away learning something a bit about the games. And I'll be on hand as well the whole time. So once you're in the museum and you're not quite sure how to play the game, I can come up and teach you how to play the game, also tell you and teach you a bit of the history about where the games come from and stuff like that. Because I really enjoy talking to people. You know, Neil has his cave days, his cave dwellers in, his patrons come down, and it's just the best day. It really is. I thoroughly look forward to helping out, volunteering in the cave, because you just meet my like-minded enthusiasts that are just into the same stuff, you know. And that's what this is one of the reasons why I'm doing it. I've put a lot of my collection into the museum, and it's probably the only place in the world that you're going to go and see a Skyskipper or a Sheriff or a prototype rescue cabinet by Stern, or, you know, a cabinet that was owned by the former manager of Led Zeppelin. You know, all this kind of stuff. They've all got stories and histories to tell.
Yeah, they've all got so much great history behind them.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, are you worried about that? I said, no, not really. You know, they've been in my collection quite a long time. I've taken to events before, Revival, that you've been to. And I just think it's nice. I just get enjoyment out of seeing people play them. because that's what they were meant for.
And I think, yeah, as you were saying, it's going to be like-minded people. It's not just the general public going in, so to speak, and, you know, kids hanging off the machines, which can happen at some of the events. You've seen it yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but it happens to your machines.
It does, yeah. I mean, occasionally, I can still imagine people hanging off Seawolf, because that's just the natural thing that kids do, hanging on the periscope. But we're hoping to get little step-up stools kids can stand on so they can play the game, because, some of them are too high, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, from what I've seen of all the people that have been through the cave, they're all really respectful. They're all enthusiasts. And that's the sort of people we want to come in. And people generally, any from any walk of life, we want to come in and welcome and get them into the hobby. But we're not marking it like an arcade you'd find, you know, on the seafront or something like that. You know, people walking in with their sandy sandals and stuff, wiping the sand everywhere.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No.
So, what days are you going to be open? Is it weekends only, or is it during the week?
I'm looking at probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the moment, but we're still working out numbers and stuff like that, and we're hoping to open up in December. We're not far away. We've got a little soft launch coming up, just a tester, just to see how it works with an amount of people in there. And then, hopefully end of November, beginning of December, we will be open for business, and I want everyone to come down and check out these amazing games we've got, because we really have got some cool games.
And whereabouts are you based, just for those who don't know?
We're based in Stroud, which is Gloucestershire. Yeah,
Cotswolds?
It's the Cotswolds, in the Cotswolds. It's the Belvedere Mill in Chalford, Stroud.
Yep.
If you go to get tickets for the arcade, you'd have to go to Neil's website, the RMC website, and get tickets in there. We're still in the process of sorting out the website, the ticketing system, and all that kind of stuff. If you want updates on how the museum's going or when we're going to open, it'll all be announced on my YouTube channel, which is Arcade Archive.
Yep.
Or Neil will probably announce it on his channel as well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'll post some links on this episode's description, linking to Neil's site and to your channel.
Yeah.
So everyone can find you.
Yeah. Have you got any games that you'd like to see in there?
Well, I've been following this quite closely. Obviously, pretty much everything that I've seen, I will have a go at.
Yeah.
You've got my game in there, but I've played that so many times, I'll leave that till last. But
Double Dragon.
Which is Double Dragon, obviously. But I know. Boring. all the classic stuff, you know, I want to see. And these machines that I haven't seen in a long time, you know. One game I do wish you had, which I don't think you have at the moment, but it might come your way, is Sega's Monaco Grand Prix,
the
first one.
Yeah.
Which I used to play that. They used to have that in a newsagent's near where I lived, and it was the sit-down version. I used to love that
game.
You
loved that.
It's not something... Yeah, it can't be... It's not on MAME because it wasn't a ROM.
Mm.
Yeah, it was... Just before all...
It's TTL Logic, is it? It's not...
I believe so, yeah.
Right, okay. I think I know the game you mean. Yeah. You never know, Dean. I mean, the plan is with the museum to rotate a lot of the games every few months. You know, that's why I'm still using my arcade here as a overspill, you know, and I can just, once we've restored a game, had it on the floor for a few months, we can change it around just to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
You know, that's the idea. So you never know. Might get one of those down there. I mean, there's so many games. People have asked for so many. We're never going to get everybody's game in there.
No, of course not. Of course not.
But you're having
a bloody good try.
Yeah, and there's the opportunity down the line to get it in there eventually and just rotate them. That is the plan. And there is potential to go another floor up as well if it's successful.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
So it could get even bigger.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just have to wait and see.
Yes, mate, I can't wait to try it. I was due to come down on the 19th, but it's my boy's birthday, which Unfortunately, I can't change.
You can't change that unless you bring him down with you.
No.
You might enjoy it.
Well, he's got a birthday party booked.
Oh, is he?
I will bring him down at some point. I took him to, in Salbridgeworth, there's a pinball room that's opened up. I don't know if you've heard about it. And I took him to that with Paul, who you know. I've forgotten Paul's surname. He lives in Hertfordshire. Paul, apologies. Paul, I've forgotten your surname. Anyway, he brought his son along as well, and they both kids had a blast, you know. They really enjoyed it. And he's never really played pinball before, so I wasn't too sure how he would go with it, but he enjoyed it. Are there any plans for you to have any pinball?
Not at this point, no. We are
no
marking it as a video game arcade museum. But, you know, if it's related in one way, like if we get we've been offered an Atari pinball. I'm not sure what era, probably early 80s. We could maybe tie that in with it being Atari. But to be honest, we don't really have the space for pinball.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? They take up a lot more room.
And the money. Pinball machines are crazy money.
Yeah.
You know, for what you're getting.
I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, even arcade games have obviously gone up in price over the years.
Yeah, I mean,
that's to be expected.
I'm a vid guy at heart, to be fair. I've got no nostalgia for pinball machines. I totally get it. You know, I can see why people buy them. They buy into the theme of something they love, if it be a superhero franchise or, I don't know, a band. But I'd still think I'd get bored of that music being played over and over again.
I was about to say that. With a pinball game, it feels very samey after a minute or so, doesn't it? Really?
And you see a lot of these pinball collectors just having them for 3 months and then changing them again. They do swap them out quite regularly for new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I do that occasionally with vids, but it's usually every couple of years, 3 years, you know.
Yeah. I think also the maintenance of a pinball machine is going to be a lot more than an arcade machine.
Oh, definitely. I still love that, you know, the vids for me. It was a big craze in the 80s. Pinball wasn't, you know, everyone was into the latest video game. It's a completely different thing than pinball, unless you're looking at EM games, electromechanical games. Yeah. But for me, it's all about the vids. It's all about the artwork. It's all about sound effects, the gameplay, everything. I just love arcade games, 16-bit games. I just think they look amazing. They play brilliantly. They can be quite competitive, which I like as well, which pinball is as well. They kind of took that idea from pinball, had a high score table, so you could start competing with each other. And that's what I love about it, you know, and the community is amazing. And say, you could put an arcade machine in a Tate gallery, it wouldn't have to even be switched on. And for me, that would be art. I could just stand there
and I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I just love them. Some of the artwork on this stuff is just absolutely amazing. And that's why we've got spaces in between each cabinet so you can see all the artwork as well. We haven't crammed it in to get as many cabs as we can in the museum. I specifically made spaces so you can see the artwork.
Yeah, and it's all lit up quite nicely, isn't it? You've got those nice lights behind the machines that, you know,
just
make lights. It look great.
Yeah, and I've been playing around with some UV paint last week.
Right.
So we'll be having some black lights in there. You'll have to wait for the video for that. See what I've been doing there. And the small room we're going to try and make we're called Arcade Archive because we want to archive a lot of this stuff. We've been offered some test kits from Atari. We've been offered lots of manuals, marquees. And I also want to concentrate on the British scene. You know, a lot of emphasis has been on the American scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I want to concentrate on the British scene because it was huge over here. Okay, not always the prettiest of cabinets, but there's still a real rabbit hole of history to delve into the UK scene. And that's what I want to touch on as well, you know, the whole bootlegging scene and stuff like that. It's a very interesting subject to cover. And, you know, photographs, I want to have black and white pictures of arcades with people in it from back in the day on the walls. So it gives you a sense of what the arcades looked like in the 80s. Yep. All that kind of stuff.
Right, it sounds fantastic, mate. If any of our listeners are not excited by any of that, then they're mad. They're crazy. Honestly, I cannot wait.
Yeah. But it's going to take time to evolve. You know, I've been so busy. I've been done pretty well in 3 months, actually two and a half months, to get 42 machines in there in two and a half months. That's pretty good going. And the games that I've got in there is incredible.
Mate, it's amazing. It really is. Like, you know, I've been, like I say, I've been following the progress on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And we've seen it go from bare rooms that needed decorating, more than decorating. Needed a lot of work, didn't they?
A lot of work, yeah. It was a lot of work.
You know, you and the guys there have done amazing. So, just seeing the final touches come together now.
Yeah. I mean, we're probably open with the without the final touches being finished. But as I said, it's something that as the museum evolves and I'm able to spend more time in there, I'll be able to add all these things, you know.
Yeah.
It will develop and evolve through time and hopefully be something really special, something really different. You can come in and actually flick through the manuals, look through pictures, look through the PCBs, you know, all that kind of stuff. I want people to come down. We're going to do talks. So we're going to get people from the industry down, like Neil does. We're going to have high score tournaments.
Yep.
So I've just been chatting to Tony Temple today, actually. Had lunch with him. He's the world champion at Missile Command, arcade blogger. Been chatting about how we can incorporate some sort of UK tournament-based event at the museum. Yep. Next year, I've been in talks with Billy Mitchell, Walter Day. They're hopefully coming over next year in July to do talks maybe on Skyskipper, the high score tournament. But I want them to relax and have fun as well, you know, all this kind of stuff, as well as UK VAT meets, because the UK VAT community has been amazing, loaning us these machines. I want to do like a tech talk where people can bring down their PCBs and try and repair them. Because that was always what was lacking from UK VAC meets, was we all wanted to meet up, but we also wanted to do swaps. We wanted to repair things. They like getting in the back of cabinets, trying to repair stuff. I want to do all of that. So, you know, if you want to get into the hobby, they're the days you want to come down and learn some tips on how to repair and stuff like that.
The good thing is as well, I think it's your location. Pretty much anyone from wherever they are, you know, couple of hours for me, and you know, I don't want to knock Arcade Club, but they're up north. That's a bit of a mission, you know. I have to stay overnight, so for me and people down south, I think this is probably even better.
Yeah, I mean, the Arcade Club is amazing. I've been saying it for years. I love going up there. It's always been our mecca to go there, play some of the games you never get to play, you know. And Andy's a top bloke. But we've never had anything down south, really, you know.
No.
There is a couple of arcades, but nothing like this, where you can come into the arcade, have your little nostalgia trip, and then go up to the cave in the afternoon. You make a whole day of it. You spend the morning, if you wanted, or you could spend the morning in the cave and then come to the arcade in the evening for the atmosphere. You know, that's what we want to try and do. So you're learning about how the whole story moved and evolved from arcades into consoles, into computers. And to have both of us there in one building is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
It really is. And Neil's setup is incredible. You haven't been there yet, Dean, have you?
I haven't, no. It's something we've been meaning to do. You've got to come down. We want to have a Retro Asylum meet up there. So, yeah, we will. We'll be there.
Come down to a podcast.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I will. The team
spend
would
the day
that.
There. Yeah, because I'm planning to do 2 or 3 UK VAT meets a year there. But if you can't make those, just book in a day, book the afternoon in the arcade, or in the morning in the cave, you know. Either way, it's a whole day there. The only thing we haven't got is a cafe or anything like that. Neil's got his tuck shop. You can buy teas and coffees, cakes and biscuits and crisps. But I don't have anything like that in the museum. I don't have the facilities.
Yeah.
So there is a really lovely cafe couple of minutes walk away, so it's not the end of the world. You know, so if you wanted a break, you can go to the cafe, have your lunch, come back and carry on, you know. But hopefully something like that will come to the building at some point, a little cafe. But other than that, yeah, it's just an incredible day. If you're into your retro, you're going to love it. Honestly, you're going to love it. Yeah. I mean, you walk into Neil's place, it's amazing. You walk into the arcade archive, it looks fantastic. It really does.
Well, you know what I'm thinking? 8-bit wars. You know, we always do these things. So you can see, you can play the arcade game, then go upstairs, play the home micro version, then have me discuss how bad the Amstrad or the C64 version is.
Well, that's it. That's it. Yeah. Oh, see, that's what it was like, though, back in the day, wasn't it? You know,
exactly. Yeah.
You go down the arcade, then nip to WH Smith on the way home, get your copy of Paperboy or whatever it was, load it up on the old Speccy. Oh, my God, this is rubbish.
Convince yourself it's just as good.
Yeah.
Where's my handlebars?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but that was the whole fun of it. I remember it so well. So much nostalgia. Yeah.
Great. Well, look, I'm really looking forward to it. As you can tell, I'm not just saying that, mate. I really wish you the best, and I'll be there at some point. And you know, the rest of the team hopefully join me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a busy time.
We can experience it for ourselves.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
yeah.
But I'm sure it's going to be a great success for you.
Oh, thanks, Dean.
You're welcome, mate. You're welcome. Right, let's just run that address by us again, just in case people have forgotten.
It is at the Belvedere Mill, Chalford. Yep. Stroud in the Cotswolds. I don't know, is it Cotswolds, Gloucestershire? I think it is. Yeah.
I mean, if you just
Google RMC, the cave, it's his address at the moment. It will come up on Google Maps and you can get a distance and a time limit, how long it takes you to get there.
Okay. And what I'll do, once you are open, I'll announce it on our show as well. So anyone listening to this who has forgotten by that point can then book in and pay you a visit.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing everyone.
Yes, me too. Me too. Yeah. All right, mate. Well, if I don't see you, good luck with it, and I'll be up soon.
Cheers, Dean.
All right.
Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome. Cheers, no mate. Problem. See you soon, mate. Bye. Bye.
Too late. Missed the boat on a game? Don't worry, the Playthrough podcast are bringing it back. Cruise over to the website at playthrough.com for episodes, links to our Discord and Twitter, and much more. Play along with Playthrough and be part of the conversation.
So there you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Alex. I'm really looking forward to visiting the arcade archive. As I said, I would have liked to have done it next week, but it's my boy's birthday, so it will have to wait until another time. But the week after that, as I've already mentioned, we will be at the Crash Live 2022 event, which is also with Fusion Books. So again, if you need tickets, if you fancy something to do and you can get to Walsall, Banksy Stadium, it's retrofusionbooks.com. I'm sure there's tickets still available, but be quick because I know that there isn't that many left. And guys, I just want to say thanks to all our Patreons. I also need to apologise to Paul Higgins, whose name I forgot during the interview. Sorry about that, mate. Just a total mind fart during that. So yeah, we'll be back soon, no doubt. It'll probably be Mads and Chris with a Games Club episode. And then we'll be back for the Christmas episode, and who knows, we might even get the 90s Part 3 special recorded and out before then. Anyway, guys, take care of yourselves and keep it retro. See you soon. Bye-bye.